I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And it's almost the end of the year, John. Have you done all your holiday shopping? Have you done the holiday parties at work and gotten drunk with your coworkers and told horrible stories?
I have not. At my job, they do a holiday party outside, you know, at a restaurant. And I have not gone to my holiday party in many years because they do that. I think it's called the White Elephant.
Yep.
They do, which apparently there's an Office episode about that. Watch The Office. And I find that my coworker's like, well, you don't have to participate in it. And I'm like, I find it so disconcerting to even be in the same room as that's going on that I just elect kind of not to go. But this year I had the thought to go because I'm actually pretty friendly with a lot of my coworkers at this point. But I kind of couldn't get, there was childcare issues where I couldn't get out of the house to go. So I didn't end up going, and I do almost no Christmas shopping. I end up buying my father-in-law a book, and not a lot of holiday spirit for me, but I am going to be going to my wife's parents' house for a Hanukkah party tonight. So I think that's where my wife is now, is buying some last minute kind of Hanukkah things and has the boy in tow. So that's going.
So as we're recording this, my company had the holiday party yesterday.
Yes.
And we went to because we're a golf company, we went to a golf country club kind of place. And they have a bar. So it's the Inverness Golf and Conference Center. So Inverness has a golf club that you can buy a membership at. And it's not like the Caddyshack movie. It's not like you have to be introduced by, you can just walk in there and say, hey, I'd like to join this club. You slap down some money and you get on the list and you can go play golf there. Okay. But they also have the hotel, they have the conference center, they have a bar, and we basically rented the bar for the day. And so it's got pool tables and shuffleboard and all this other kind of weird stuff in there. And we go there and we do our White Elephant. And we have lunch and all that kind of stuff. And we do this year we did HQ awards, and where people nominate other people and then the management team decides who gets the awards. So we have a year-long contest where the office is split into two teams, and we do a bunch of things throughout the year. Like we have a canned food drive. We did last year. We did a kindness drive where it was just random acts of kindness, and we do things like we adopted a couple of families this year and bought all their Christmas presents and stuff, and we do stuff like that throughout the year. Traditionally, the first event of the year is the ugly sweater contest, but this year it was the adopt the family contest. So the second event was the ugly sweater contest, which takes place at the holiday party. So we all showed up in our ugly sweaters and we get participation points for that. And then whoever has the ugliest sweater, as voted on by the bartender, who is supposedly the neutral person in the room, right, gets their team a bunch of extra points for that. So that was kind of our holiday party. We did the ugly sweater thing. They did the White Elephant. I have stopped participating in the White Elephant because it's all booze.
Right. Right.
Every single thing that these people buy is booze. They buy the Crown Royal gift things. They buy bottles of wine. They buy scotch. You name it. If it's alcohol, they buy it, and they put it in a package and they put it up there for the White Elephant. And it's just like, you know that you can go out and buy your own bottle of wine, right?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand. I got you with that.
Now, one of the senior art director on the marketing team told me that he was going to a Hanukkah party that night. And I asked him, because I honestly don't know. I said, well, what is involved with a Hanukkah party? And he said, I don't know, but I'm going because we were invited. I'm like, oh, okay. So, John, can you enlighten me as to what happens at a Hanukkah party?
Oh, well, I don't know how traditional the one that my in-laws throw is. As people know, Hanukkah is 8 nights, and you know, you're supposed to celebrate it every night, but obviously you're not going to have a party 8 nights in a row. So it's sort of a, I mean, you make latkes, which are like the potato pancakey kind of things. And I think this one is jelly donuts too. That's a tradition for some reason too. My wife is Jewish. I'm not Jewish. So I'm probably really like butchering all of the things that can be done, but it's just an opportunity to get together with family and you have certain foods and.
Well, and that's the best part, right? You just you're getting together and hanging out and have a good time.
Yeah. So it's nice. Cause my wife's cousins both live in New York. So they're taking the train in. So we're going to pick them up at the train station right over here. And then we're going to go over to her parents' house. So it's nice. So it's going to be a little more people there than would typically be. So yeah, it's, there's not a lot that goes on, and then you exchange gifts and all that. So it's pretty low key as compared to Christmas.
I will say, I picked the Marvelous Miss Maisel or Mrs. Maisel, last week. And I said that it was a very Jewish show. Uh-huh. And her entire family is Jewish, and it's the 1950s. So I'm sure, absolutely certain that they're probably playing up stereotypes in the show. Right.
Sure.
And cliches and stuff like that. But one of the things that was funny to me was that she kept making brisket.
Right.
And taking brisket to the club to get a better spot.
Right.
Which I thought was very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It reminded me of the Big Bang Theory too. Right. Because it was Howard would say, you want to come over, mom's cooking. What's she making? Well, she's making a brisket.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because my mother-in-law is converted, so she wasn't raised Jewish, but she converted when she married my father-in-law. So she is very into the religion part of it, as people who convert to a different religion tend to be. They tend to get pretty into it if, you know, they go full on. But she doesn't have like this super tradition of like her childhood and everything.
Right.
So it's coming from a different point of view than I think someone who was raised that way. So it's a little different.
So speaking of end of the year and the holidays, go ahead, John.
Oh, I was going to say, so the intention of the show was to do picks of the year, and we were going to give our, you know, favorite books, you know, maybe like top three books of the year, top three TV shows, top three albums. And I think we're going to start that way. However, as we mentioned in the last episode, we are recording this the day after both Patrick and I watched The Last Jedi. So in the minutes leading up to this show, we were trying to go, should we just do a Last Jedi spoiler show, or should we do our picks? And I don't know, like, so I think we're gonna start with picks, but it will almost certainly, you know, evolve into a Last Jedi. One of the reasons I might want to wait, well, two reasons, because if this show airs Tuesday, many of our listeners may not have seen the movie yet, and so are not going to want to listen to this show, so they'll hold off on it. Also, I will warn everybody right away, if we do start going down that path, we will give plenty of warning. Like, here lies spoilers. Do not stop your podcast now if you haven't seen it. If we do go down that path, we will. I am very sensitive to that, particularly when it comes to this movie. But I think I would like to kind of start with the picks, because I think that would be nice for people to hear some of our favorite things. We've probably picked some of them already, but it is funny if you kind of look back on the year what you enjoyed. And I was thinking, because we often talk about it, and might be a good place to start, is maybe we could talk about the favorite series, TV series that we watched this year. So I'm not going to list them in any particular order, because I'm not sure how far we're going to get with anything. I'm probably just going to start with my favorites, so at least those get out there. Like, I don't want to do top three and then we don't get to number one. So I'm going to start. So let's start with TV. So Patrick can think about what his favorite TV things of the years are. And I'm going to pick one that I think is going to surprise people, although I know I picked it when I watched it. And that is a Netflix show called Travelers. And I don't know if you watched that one, Patrick.
I watched the first episode.
Right. So, okay. This is the one where it's Will from Will and Grace. Eric McCormick is the lead on this show. And it is a joint venture between Netflix and one of the Canadian sci-fi production companies, because I think it airs on one of the sci-fi channels in Canada first, and then Netflix gets it later. And I believe the second season is coming pretty soon to Netflix, in another week or two. But it's a where there are time travelers, but they really what they do is their consciousness goes back in time into a host body, and they have all the historical records. So what they do is they take the host body of somebody minutes or seconds before they were about to die. So they take over, and it's a really interesting thing because they try to keep the cover of that person. So they sort of try to lead their life, but then do these sort of secret missions to help prevent whatever awful things happened in the future. And it was a concept that I just thought was interesting, but the reason I'm picking it is I looked forward to watching that every night more than anything else that I can remember watching this year. That was the one where it's like, got to get to the next episode. Got to, you know, I enjoyed many shows this year, and some I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's, you know, cause I tend to just binge a series. And when I say binge, I watch one episode a night. Typically, sometimes I get into a second, depending on how long they are. But that was the one where I loved every minute. I was really engaged in the story. I was sad when it was over. I wanted more. And so I got to pick it, cause I feel like that one got some pretty good press when it came out. But, to me, it was the one that I enjoyed the most. So that is my first TV pick, is Travelers, and it's on Netflix season one. And by the time you're listening to this, I think the second season's coming out at the end of December. So by the time you get around to it, you may actually have two seasons to watch. So that's my first pick of the year for TV. What do you got, Patrick?
Bosch.
Ooh, okay.
So Bosch is an original on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. And it's based on the books. And they have several seasons, and there is another season coming. And I absolutely loved that show. It's a cop show. It's a procedural, but it's very different. It's not like you see on network TV, because obviously it's on Amazon Prime. And Bosch is a very sort of damaged character. He has a sense of right and wrong and honor, but it allows him to do things that you would normally think that's not right or honorable, just because he reminds me of Galad in the Wheel of Time. You know, he has a sense of right and wrong, and if it's right to destroy an entire village to save the world, he's going to destroy the entire village to save the world. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I like the dynamics between him and his partner, between him and his boss. His family dynamic is very interesting. He is divorced, and his wife and daughter live in Las Vegas with his wife's new husband. And it's all very complicated. And he's the son of a prostitute who was murdered when he was a kid, and that haunts him and kind of drives him. And so he has whenever he sees any sort of violence against women or especially prostitutes, that tends to set him off and give him tunnel vision. It's a fantastic show. It's very high drama, well worth people's time.
Nice. And how many seasons is that up to?
I want to say there's three or four at this point.
Yeah.
Might be three and the fourth one coming. I can't remember.
Cool. That's awesome. Very good. It's again, throw another one on the list. You know, it's one of the reasons why I don't watch a lot of stuff in season, because it's a great viewing experience for me to just ingest something one episode after the other. And there's so much good stuff that you always have a season of something that you're probably interested in, that's out there. But now I'm going to break that and pick something. And I have to pick it just because it is the only show that I purchase. It's the only one that isn't on a streaming service. And well, I should say a streaming service where you get it as part of the package. So I have to pick Star Wars Rebels. I have to, because it's the only thing that I buy, and I enjoy it every time I watch it. And it's the only thing that I watch week to week. And I think they've just done such a fantastic job with that whole season, that whole series. They're on season four now, which is the final season. And it's like any animated show. Sometimes there are episodes that are, for lack of a better way of putting it, maybe a little bit of a throwaway, or maybe not a lot happens. I think that's kind of the nature of some animation, especially something that runs on a Disney channel, which is in some ways aimed at kids. And I'll say the first half of season four are some great episodes, but I'm really looking forward to the second half because they got to wrap everything up. That's what I'm hearing anyway, that it's going to wrap up the story of these characters. I am wondering if... Now, I can't, after seeing Last Jedi, I don't know what they would do with that. But if you've been keeping up with Star Wars Rebels, remember in season three, the second half of season three had direct relationships to Rogue One. I saw Guerrera coming into the episode. So,
and Clone Wars.
Yeah. So they had to kind of wait to show that second half of the season, because it would make more sense once you've seen Rogue One. I'm wondering, I don't know what they would do. I can't see how where they're at in Rebels now necessarily relates to The Last Jedi, but you never know. They may have some references in there that they wanted to wait until people had an opportunity to see The Last Jedi. But I just, week to week, that's it's so strong. And Dave Filoni, who is the head of that show, just does, you know, he's a super fan and just really respects everything and has really helped build so much of the lore and the mythology and tied it, because he worked a lot on Clone Wars as well, tied Clone Wars into it. And I look forward to that every week, and I can't wait until the second half of season four shows up. I'm sure Star Wars Rebels will be on that Disney streaming service when that goes in 2019. But as of this time, if you want to watch that and you don't have a DVR or whatever, you do have to buy it. But to me, it's well worth it. I enjoy it. And I enjoy owning them, that now if I want to go back and watch them, I got them all. I can go and rewatch. I just buy Star Wars stuff because I know I'm going to watch it more than once. So it never bothers me to buy those. So that is my second pick.
Patrick. I tend to watch that on demand.
Yeah, if you have cable and you have a DVR, you have on demand, like I would have just done that, but I don't have cable. So that's the one. And it's really proven too, because it's on season four. You can't watch any of the previous seasons either. It's not one of those like, oh, I'll just be patient and wait 6 months. And with Star Wars, I'm so invested in Star Wars that I can't wait. I can't wait for it. I gotta buy it. So, and I never mind it. And then I just have it. So it's cool.
I'm going to go with Rick and Morty.
Have not watched the current season yet, but so they're on season three. Have you watched season three now?
Yes, and I like you, I did buy this. Mm-hmm. So I bought all three seasons, and I bought them on Prime and watched them there, because I didn't have really an easy way to get them, because I always struggle with Cartoon Network.
Yeah,
and how to watch their stuff, and I never think to record stuff. Mm-hmm. And Adult Swim typically is on late, like I think it's after midnight. Mm-hmm. And it's out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and it sounds like they started up the chipper again, but
I don't hear it, if that makes it
easier. Oh, that's good. We'll see. So yeah, I enjoy Rick and Morty. I started watching it because I was pressured to, peer pressure. You know, people are going, of all the people I know, you should be watching Rick and Morty. I don't understand why you're not. And so I started watching Rick and Morty, and I've enjoyed it. It's a great show. It's very funny. It's very, what do I want to say? There is a word that I'm blanking on, so it's not like I'm a writer, but, subversive is what I want to say.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things I've always talked about is Archer. I enjoy Archer because Archer unilaterally offends everyone.
Right.
And I kind of feel like Rick and Morty does the same thing. They're very irreverent, and there is no taboos for them.
No.
And so it could be really, really funny. There's a great shirt that keeps popping up in Facebook ads for me, and it's Rick and Morty and the Doctor and what's her name?
character on the show?
Or? Yeah, the character on the show, the previous companion that traveled with him, the one that left. I can't remember her name now. So it's him and her coming out of the TARDIS and Rick and Morty coming out of a portal, and Rick's pointing something at the doctor and the doctor's pointing a sonic screwdriver at him, and it just looks hilarious. So they keep pointing that at me because they apparently have realized at Facebook that I enjoy both Doctor Who and Rick and Morty.
Yeah, it's and that seems like one where if you're buying them, that seems like something that would hold up to some repeat viewing, because some of those episodes are pretty dense. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So it seems like if you've watched them a second or third time, you'd probably pick up on some things that you didn't the first time. So that's it. They're on Hulu too. So if one has Hulu, the first two seasons are currently on Hulu, and I'm assuming the third season will pop at some point soon because it's been out for a little while now. So I'm going to go ahead and guess, but you're right. The Cartoon Network stuff, I feel like, is like all over the place in terms of where it is, in terms of streaming and everything. Yeah. So I know it's there. Cool. My third pick, and I have to pick it just because it's a one that is probably on everybody's best of the year list, and we both picked it a few episodes ago. But again, this is that, what do I look forward to? What did I, while I was in it, I was really invested. And it's Stranger Things. You can't have a best of the year, I think, not have that, because I look forward to that every night. And as much as it's horror, and it is horror, but I thought that both seasons really, but especially this season's, they just got the characters so right. And I just loved the interaction between the characters. And I think my favorite part of the whole season was the interaction between Steve and Dustin.
Yeah.
That was so great. I loved it so much just because they really just got that kind of 80s movie feel, where it really feels like an 80s movie. It doesn't feel like, hey, we're making an 80s homage, everybody. Isn't it funny that their hair is funny and that they're dressed funny? It really feels like it's made in the 80s in a lot of ways, but in the best way. And you just love those kids. And I thought the new characters they added were great. Max was a great character to add to it. And I loved the relationship between Jonathan and Nancy. I thought that was when you're following multiple characters, you know, of course you end up picking your favorites and you're like, oh, just get back to this part. Oh, just get back to these characters. I want to see what they're doing. And I always just loved wherever they were at. It's like, oh, Sean Astin and Winona Ryder, they're doing something now. That's cool. Oh, it's Max and Lucas, the scene with them. That's cool. Like, I just, wherever they went, I was happy that they went there. And everyone talks about that show. It's on everyone's year-end lists, I bet. But if you haven't watched Stranger Things yet and you have Netflix, it's so worth your time. And again, I am not a horror guy at all. So yeah, it's kind of scary at points and there are horror elements, but it's not, again, I don't follow horror. So you don't have to be a horror fan to enjoy the show. So that is going to be my third pick.
Okay.
All right. Do you have a third pick?
I'm torn between three different things.
We can mention, it could be a three-way tie for third place.
I'm going to say The Tick.
Oh, okay.
So this is a Prime original, and this is Ben Edlund, who created The Tick originally. Mm-hmm. And he finally got to do the TV show the way he wanted to.
Hmm.
And there was a Tick live action show several years back on Fox, and mm-hmm. it starred Putty from
right.
Seinfeld as the Tick. And don't get me wrong, he did a fantastic job. He was mm-hmm. great as the Tick, but that show had a lot of problems because, you know, it's your typical Fox show where they decide to give you a bunch of notes and you can't have, you know, Batman well. Because, or you can't have Deflator Mouse. You have to have Batman Well.
Right.
Right, which is just stupid. Because they're like, American audiences won't get Deflator Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. You know, right. And they changed American Maid to Captain Liberty, I think is what they called her. and they just did a lot of weird stuff. So he kind of got to reboot this series on Prime and do it his own way. And he's done that by introducing different characters. So he's not going back to the original material, the original cartoon and stuff. He still has Arthur and his sister, Dot, and he still has the Tick as the Tick. The actor who's playing the Tick is fantastic. Love him to death. And but he's kind of brought in some different villains and different things, and it's just such a good show. It's so funny. It mocks all the things about superhero shows and movies that we all talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And it just does a great job. And it still has that Bette Endland humor, which mm-hmm. is so fantastic. I've said many times that Angel in the final couple of seasons got so good because they brought in Bette Endland as an executive producer. And he was responsible for Smile Time, mm-hmm. which is one of the best episodes of Angel ever, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for him to be able to get to do this show was fantastic. And the show itself is just, it's one of those where it's a very short season. I want to say it's 6 or 8 episodes, and they're shorter episodes as well. I think they're like half an hour to 40 minutes, something like that. And when it's over, you're going, wait, there's not another episode? Really? I want another episode.
Yeah. That's when you know it's like your favorite, because it's like, oh, I'm sad that we're done.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when I finish a season, I'm like, cool, finish that season. What's next? But a lot of times there are things where it's like, oh, that's over. That's a bummer. Cool. Yeah. We'll have to check that again. Another one on the list. You know, I love that we have so much good stuff. It's amazing.
So the honorable mentions are Mozart in the Jungle and Gilmore Girls: A Year in the Life.
Cool. Okay. Those sound good. My wife and I were watching Mozart in the Jungle, and we don't watch TV enough together. And it's one of those things where we can't cheat on each other and watch without the other. Right. We have a couple of those that we're in the middle of where we only watch TV together maybe once a week. And a lot of times by the time we're there, we just like watch a stand-up comedian or some comedy. Like, we haven't watched a drama together in a while, cause it's like, oh, it's already 10 o'clock and I don't want to commit to watching an hour. My brain can't handle that now. So yeah, we're in the middle of Mozart in the Jungle season 2 or 3. I don't even know, but that's one we're in the middle of that we haven't watched in like a year now. And we enjoyed that too. It just, you know, lost steam with that one, but that's one I got to get back to. Honorable mentions for me. I just finished Voltron Legendary Defender mm-hmm. on Netflix. Love it. That's, if you liked the original and you liked Avatar the Last Airbender and Legend of Korra, it's the same creators of those shows, and they're doing a great job with it. Just explaining all those things, like, why is the blue guy in the red lion, and why does the red guy have the, I don't understand. And they sort of take those things that didn't make any sense because these were Asian shows that were transported over and it didn't necessarily translate well, and you may have not even gotten all the episodes or in any way. So they do a great job of telling a story based on Voltron, but sort of creating its own mythology, and especially in seasons 3 and 4, which I just watched them both back to back, which is essentially was one season that they broke up. I think one came out in the summer and one came out about a month ago. They should have just put it all out as one season, but whatever, it's fine. But that is an honorable mention for me, definitely. That Voltron show was great. So I recommend that one quite a bit. I was thinking of going on to some albums now. So if you want to go into that.
Sure.
But I got some albums. And I go into my Google Play Music and I'm looking like, what did I play the most? And these play counts are not necessarily accurate because I'm not sure if this is just plays on my computer or plays on my phone. I feel like sometimes the plays on my phone don't show up here. This is not my pick, but I do use my phone for my son to listen to music. So most of the tunes that got played a lot are in the, you know, 10 times range or so. The number one song for me for the year, not me, really for my son, is this song called Stay by Zedd and Alicia Cara, some pop electronic thing that my son loved. We listened to that 98 times this year. We would just put that on repeat in the car when I was driving him to this program that he did in the summer. It was about a half hour drive. So we'd listen to it literally 10 times each way. So that's my son's number one pick. But for mine, the first album I'm going to pick is, and the name of the band is the name of the album, and it's called Tokyo Motor Fist, which is one of these albums put out by the Frontiers Records company, that Italian label that puts out a lot of new stuff. A lot of the old hair bands, I've talked about them many times before. This is actually a side project slash super group of, if you can call it that. And I know I'm sort of poking fun because people are going to make fun of me for loving this album considering the members, but is the singer from Danger Danger, which was an 80s hair metal band, and the guitar player from Trickster, which was an 80s hair metal band, and not even A-level hair metal bands. They were sort of the B to C-level hair metal bands. They were like the last gasp. And I enjoyed those bands at the time. But this album is so good. It's just so, the songwriting is excellent. I love, Ted Poley is the name of the singer. He's a great singer. I just love the tone of his voice. Obviously, if you like those kind of bands, it sounds like old Def Leppard a little bit. But there's kind of a power pop element to it as well. And I just listened to this album a ton. I just couldn't get enough of this album this year. So it's great. And it's on, you know, your streaming services. So if you like those kind of old hair metal bands and you like Cheap Trick and that kind of thing, power pop with heavy guitars and good guitar solos, big harmonies, I would recommend that. So Tokyo Motor Fist, that is my first album pick. What's your first album pick?
Well, I don't listen to a lot of new stuff typically. A lot of times I listen to older stuff. But John, you led me down a couple of roads this year.
I know I did.
So I'll say Rival Sons, like anything by them. They're definitely in my most played on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of good albums, and I've probably added all of them to my to my Spotify and listened to them. They're definitely, you know, a rock band in the vein of Zeppelin, which is how they came to my attention in the first place because of you, you know, mentioning them in that context. And it was funny because as soon as I tweeted out about them and how much I was enjoying their music, they tweeted back.
Oh, that's cool.
And kind of started a conversation and said, thank you. And, you know, we appreciate them, blah, blah, blah. So that's always kind of a nice little bonus when someone like that says, thanks for being a fan. So, so any of their albums, just put in Rival Sons and, Pressure and Time, I think is one of my favorites. They also have, oh gosh, what was it? Hollow Bones. I think I really liked a lot. So yeah, just check out their stuff. Great band.
Yeah. And they have a ton of videos too. Yep. So if you YouTube them, there's probably 10 videos and they look like a 70s hard rock band.
Yes, they do.
You know, that vibe going. So if you like that kind of stuff, that I would definitely recommend them too. While you're there, I didn't really listen too much to them, but another new band that kind of sounds like a classic band is the one called The Struts. Eddie Trunk recommended them on a recent show and interviewed the singer, and I listened to them, and same kind of deal, like that classic rock sound, but the singer has a little bit of a Freddie Mercury vibe going.
Nice.
So it's a little Zeppelin-y, but a little more kind of acrobatic in the vocals, and very good. So I checked out their first album. It's not one of my picks, but if you like a lot of that stuff that I sort of clued you in on this year, I think you might like that band too, and they're English. Although Rival Sons is American, I think.
I think they are, yeah.
Yeah, but this band, The Struts, is not. My next pick is going to be Sons of Apollo, and the name of their album is called Psychotic Symphony. And this is a sort of a progressive rock metal band, another super group. It seems like I just always love the super groups. It is, and it's funny because I liked Dream Theater a lot, especially when they kind of first came out on the scene. And they never did better to me than Images and Words. That was technically was their second album. They had a debut album that had a different singer that kind of really didn't do anything. Most people didn't hear about them until the second album. I didn't, for sure. They never did better than in that album in my mind. They put out a third album that I liked a lot, but it wasn't quite as good as that second. And then after that, I kind of fell off, and they always put an album out every 2-3 years, whatever, and always toured. And I saw them a couple times through the years, but whereas their first album was progressive-y, there were still really good songs on that, on those early Dream Theater albums. And as they went on, the songs got longer and they just got really heavy. Dream Theater, they just got like super thrashy, and it'd be like 20 minute songs. And I love that kind of stuff, but nothing ever stuck with me. Like, I would always sort of check out when they put a new album out, and I'd just be like, yeah, it's okay, it's fine. But funny enough, when Mike Portnoy, the drummer, left Dream Theater, he's done a million projects, and I think I've loved every project that he's done post Dream Theater, and I have not kept up with the new Dream Theater stuff really. So it's kind of interesting, because that's kind of a weird thing. But this is his new project called Sons of Apollo, and it's Mike Portnoy on drums. It's Derek Sherinian on keyboards, who was in Dream Theater for a couple albums, is sort of in their middle period. Also played with a lot of people, was in Billy Idol's touring band, was with Alice Cooper, lots of people. Billy Sheehan on bass from Mr. Big and the Winery Dogs. Jeff Scott Soto on vocals, who sang with a lot of groups, including Yngwie Malmsteen's early albums when there were vocals. And the sort of all-star of it, considering how great these players are, is Bumblefoot on guitar. And he played in Guns N' Roses, and, you know, sort of before they got back together, he was sort of the Slash role. But he's a really interesting player, and it's just great progressive metal. But Jeff Scott Soto's voice is so, it's so warm, and it's not like that operatic. Like, that's the thing. I don't dig the operatic metal voices, you know? Like, I just kind of get turned off by that. It kind of doesn't do it for me. And Jeff Scott Soto's got, like, this really kind of edgy, warm voice that kind of holds it all together. And I just listened to this album a ton. It is kind of progressive-y. There are like some 10-minute songs, but just great hard rock, great tunes, great playing. If you like progressive rock, if you like metal, it's by far the best album of the year for me. So it's Sons of Apollo is the name of the band, Psychotic Symphony. All right, what's your next one, Patrick?
Hailstrom.
Ooh, okay, good one. Good one.
So this is where, you know, you put in Rival Sons and you see what comes up as similar.
Uh-huh.
And so again, this is the one you led me down. And I just went down this rabbit hole and I found a bunch of bands that I liked. And I really enjoyed, I think they've only got 4 albums out.
Mm-hmm.
And so listen to any of them. And I feel like they did a lot of covers.
They put out 2 covers EPs, yeah, in the past, I think, in this past, yeah, year. Yeah.
So, and those are very interesting and fun. Mm-hmm. So, it's just a good band. I like having, you don't really see much anymore a female lead singer in like a hard rock band.
Yeah. It's kind of coming back now.
Yeah.
It's kinda,
which
you're
is great.
Seeing it now. Yeah. And she's definitely, Lizzie Hale is the name. She's definitely leading the way with that.
Oh yeah. And she's awesome. She's absolutely
amazing
awesome.
Voice. Yeah,
loving that. And I think some of the earlier albums, it's a guy singing, and then they kind of switch to her.
Oh, I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Because there are some songs where there's a guy singing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I like it. I enjoy it.
It's modern sounding, but with a little nod to kind of classic rock too.
Yeah.
And great voice. They have a great song called Miss Misery. I can't think of the name of the tune right now. I think it's Miss Misery.
Yeah, there's also Miss Hyde or something like that.
Oh, something like that. Yeah, great. We sound like two old ladies. Like, what's the name with the fella from, you know, he was on that show?
Dabney Coleman.
Yes, that's what we sound like with the two old ladies. But no, great, great band. YouTube some of that. That's what's great about this stuff is you could just sit and go down a rabbit hole on YouTube, yep, and watch their videos. And I never thought I would be a person, which is why I've become way less critical of people using their phones to record concerts and stuff. I mean, look, in the moment, I always kind of feel like, man, just be here in the show and all that. And we've had conversations about that before. But I have to say, I'm guilty of watching those videos on YouTube. I'll go down the rabbit hole of watching these bands, and then I'll see and like, look, if you got a good phone, sometimes like it's not bad in terms of the video quality and the audio quality. It's like, you know, you adjust your expectations when you could tell it's a shaky phone cam, but it's surprising how much I'll watch of that because it's bands that are maybe not that well known, and you're not going to find a lot of other live stuff. So if someone recorded their show, I end up watching it a lot. And there's some pretty cool stuff of Hailstorm, particularly kind of connecting it back to some of the 80s metal. I don't know if they did a tour with Tom Kiefer, who's the lead singer in Cinderella, but there's some great YouTube videos of them doing Nobody's Fool, which was an old Cinderella hit, and they do it as a duet and she kills on it. Yeah. I don't know if that's on any of their covers albums. I think it's going to be on one of his new albums where they actually did a proper recording, but she kills on that. And that's a great song. So that is worth checking out, that duet with them. Did I pick two or did I pick
that?
I think I did two. All right. I'll have to do one as an honorable mention, but I think I'm going to do the Night Flight Orchestra, Amber Galactica. And I did do this as a pick in an episode, I know, earlier in the year. But again, just listen to this album a ton. Just great Swedish band, great tunes, a lot of diversity in the tunes, like some hard rock, some power pop, a little bit of like even like a 70s disco-y kind of flair on a couple tunes, just like, but the whole album is just great songs, a little bit of kind of REO Speedwagon, a little Styx, just you know, front to back, a great, that's what it always comes down to, is like, are the songs good? Like, does this hold up to repeat listening? Because the playing might be great, it might sound good, but do those songs stick with you? And all the albums that I picked, the songs really stick. So that's one that I listened to a whole lot this year. So Night Flight Orchestra, Amber Galactic.
Have you ever seen the episode of That 70s Show where Eric for Thanksgiving wants everybody to go and camp out overnight to get tickets to see Styx?
No.
And they all give him shit and say, look, I don't even want to be associated with someone who likes Styx. You know, that's not a real band, blah, blah, blah. And he goes by himself and buys about the only ticket sold for the entire concert for Styx. And then it's revealed by the end of the episode that they all actually love Styx secretly, but they don't want to be made fun of.
Yeah, Styx was one of those bands, man. Like, they're still putting albums out, but they have a weird history because their lead singer hasn't been in the band in like 20 years now. So they're kind of an odd one, but I hear it's a kind of a cool band to go see. But
what was the feud between them and who was it? Was it the guy from Journey? No, there was something, I can't remember what it was. Anyway, never mind. My pick is going to be, again, going down that road, Inglorious.
Ooh, I love Inglorious. I think I told you about them. You did. Like, yeah.
These are all from you. I don't have ways of discovering new bands for the most part. I get so entrenched in the tunnel vision of my comfort zone that I don't seek out new stuff until like I'll put it out on Facebook or Twitter or something and say, what's some new bands? What's some things people are listening to? And then I get recommendations that way. And this was just something that you kept recommending, like a bunch of different things to me. And I enjoyed all of them immensely. Now, this is an English band, a British band.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think they've only got two albums out, and they're both named after them. That's like Inglorious and Inglorious 2.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so they're doing the Zeppelin thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are great, great albums and great songs. And that guy has a really strong voice. I don't remember his name. James?
His name is Nathan James.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh, so powerful, that guy's voice. Yep. And the one I can't think of the name of the one single they have with the that had come out recently or on the second album. But there's a great single with a great video, and it's he's kind of like this big hulking guy.
Yeah, he kind of looks huge like guy.
And it kind of looks a little Thor like, you know. But it's yeah, I heard him interviewed on one of the podcasts that I like recently, and it was great to hear like this sort of English accent. And, you know, he's like, well, we're a proper rock band. That's what we are. Everyone likes this electronic-y stuff, but we're a proper rock band and we make proper albums. Like, I loved it. I just love hearing guys talk like that. And I love that album. So powerful voice, man. That dude can sing. I think he was in Trans-Siberian Orchestra for a tour as well, which I didn't know that until I heard this recent interview with him. But cool. I'm glad you ended up liking a lot of that stuff this year, because it's like, it's just look, man, you get good good bands like with a good singer and good tunes and put some heavy guitars on it and it's always going to sound good.
Yep.
It's hard to do, but it's always a formula and that's going to work. And I don't know what like sort of current music is, but I like what's putting out there. And it's kind of like what we talk about with TV all the time. It's sort of the best time and the worst time to live with all this stuff, because there's everything is kind of a niche and there's so much stuff. But if you work a little bit at it, or if you have some friends that will turn you on to good stuff, you can find kind of exactly what you're looking for. It's always out there.
Agreed.
But it's not going to have that impact like it did back in the day, because I don't know what a hit is anymore. Like I'm sure you have your Taylor Swifts of the world and all that kind of thing that most people know about, but it's, you know, like kind of like what rock radio was back in the day. That's not really there anymore. So it's these niches, but I think a lot of these bands, you know, they get a couple of albums out, they get their name out there and they try to tour and they try to get opening slots for more established bands and they try to develop their own thing. And some of them are succeeding and some of them you may not see after a while, because we'll see if they can, because I think that's the one thing that still can't be replaced by the internet, that experience of being at a show and being there and hearing music played well live. There's something about that all the phone videos on YouTube can't quite capture, being in that same room.
Well, it's not so, it's not just music. There's a different energy with a live in-person event. And right. I've mentioned this before to people who don't like sports. And I get it. You don't like sports. But if you went to a football game, if you went to a baseball game, it's completely different than having it on a TV. And it, you know, I never really cared for sports growing up, watching sports on TV. Mm-hmm. I played sports. I played baseball. I played basketball. Being a big guy, I always had coaches trying to get me to play football, and I had no interest in it. But going, like, when we got to high school, my friends and I, one of the things was, you know, Friday night lights, right? You go to the Friday night game. And Fresno High's team sucked. We lost every single game ever. But we went to every Friday game for the longest time because it was just so much fun. We went to Fresno State football games because it's just so much fun. You're just hanging out. There's this energy. Mm-hmm. It's different. It's different. And so it's not just music, John. It's just getting out there and being in that environment, feeling the energy of all those people there, enjoying themselves, having a good time. You know, it's infectious.
Yeah, like I can give a crap about basketball, but I remember going to a couple games as a kid and I always enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I always liked being there. It was always fun and much more enjoyable live than on TV.
The crowd gets up and starts screaming. You get up and start screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a tribal thing almost that like we get into. But that's cool. All right, here's what I was thinking we can do, because we're coming up on like the 50-minute mark or so. And rather than do picks for books, because then that's probably going to be another 20 minutes or so, I was thinking, because it's the elephant in the room with The Last Jedi. Now, and I don't want to do a full spoiler review, because I think I really want to see it a couple more times. Before at least one more time, before I really break it down scene by scene, because that's probably going to be an hour show in its own right. But maybe we can. I will put the spoiler warning. I'm not planning on spoiling anything, but I'm putting the spoiler warning out now. So if you haven't seen Last Jedi yet, and you're going to, and you don't want to be spoiled, maybe stop the podcast now and come back and listen to these last few minutes after you've seen it, just in case Patrick or I end up giving something away. You just may not want to know our feelings about it, because that may kind of taint it for you. But I want to get your impression. Like, what was your experience like? Just what are your kind of initial thoughts on it?
It was surprisingly fucking hilarious.
Yes. Very funny. couldn't agree more with that.
I don't know if that comes from Disney just, you know, trying to inject more humor into these things because they've seen how well it works with the Marvel movies, with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And it, I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but even have you seen Thor Ragnarok?
I haven't. So don't spoil that.
I will say that movie is also fucking hilarious.
I know that everyone said that, and I am prepared for that.
And I don't know if that's just bleeding over into this, or like if it's a new philosophy that they're doing with their movies, because they realize that we don't have to take these things so damn seriously.
Here's my thoughts on the humor of it. First of all, Rian Johnson came out in the weeks leading up to the release saying like, hey man, this movie's funny too. I know we're all kind of focusing on the dark of it and the seriousness of it, but look, the original trilogy was funny. There was funny spots in the mm-hmm. original trilogy. And it's true. Like so much of Han's dialogue is funny. The droids are funny. Like there's a lot of funny moments in those first three movies.
I think this is much more. This is.
Oh yeah.
This is definitely. More. And I feel like it's more calculated and done so well.
That's what I think it is. Look, if you look back on the prequels, I think Lucas was trying to be funny there and failed miserably. Yeah. And that's one of the big failures of that is that the jokes he had were just not funny. Like you saw him coming from a mile away and they weren't funny. All the funny bits in this were perfect. Mm-hmm. And here's a spoiler, like literally the first scene is a joke.
Yeah.
And the first couple scenes really, and it's in a couple ways, there's jokes in the first two and you're like, what? It catches you off guard. You're like, wait a minute. I'm about to watch this serious space opera and people are going to die.
But that falls in with the first movie, the Force Awakens, because one of the very first things that Poe Dameron's saying in the first movie is, so do I talk now or do you talk? Like who talks? Which one of us talks?
We tend to forget about the humor in some of the Star Wars, but it's there and it's very present here. And along the same lines, if you were kind of keeping up with the marketing of it, is the Porgs and their sort of comic relief. And I know there was a lot of worry going into it. It's like, oh no, are these going to be the new Ewoks?
No, they're not.
And they're perfect.
Yeah,
I thought they were used just the right amount.
The main scene that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
With, I don't know how spoilery we want to be, but with a certain character was so damn funny.
Yes.
So damn funny. Like every time he turns around, there's another one staring at him.
Yeah.
In horror.
They were used. Yes. Yeah. They were used perfectly. And that was my hope because I know I listened to all these Star Wars podcasts and I didn't spoil myself at all going into this, but that was sort of a growing concern. Like that they were like, is this going to be you?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Are they going to have like a role where they take down the first order?
Yeah. Even to the point where they called out Johnson on whatever show he was on. Was it Jimmy Kimmel?
I know they were.
Do you regret putting these porgs in this movie? You know, are you taking full responsibility for it? Blah blah. And he's like, I do. I take full responsibility. They're in the movie, and it's fine. And like, only one person, I think it was Finn, said that he was against the porgs and he didn't like having the porgs in the movie.
Yeah, well, and he's not really in any scenes with them anyway, so it's fine. But agreed. It is very like that's what you heard going into this was that it's very different. It's very different. It is. It's still a great Star Wars movie, but it's got a different tone, and I want to see it a couple more times because I enjoyed it the whole time. I felt it took a little while to get cooking. Like I felt like once there was this kind of pivotal scene, sort of in the middle. Then it was just full steam ahead and great. And it was a long movie. It was 2.5 hours or maybe a little longer than that, maybe like 2:35 or something like that. But there's a lot of characters. I feel like if you trace all the main people, they all really had a nice arc. I really felt, you know, as I'm sort of been thinking about it the past 24 hours, I'm thinking like, yeah, that character had a nice arc in this movie. And that one, you know, you know, a couple characters do get a little bit shortchanged, as is going to happen. But for the most part, I was like very satisfied. I thought the sort of framing device that he used to tell the story was really well done. I just thought it hung together well, and callbacks to the original trilogy, and but not like how The Force Awakens was, but there was definitely elements where you're like, oh, that's a little Empire-like, and oh, that's a little Return of the Jedi-like, and that's fine. That's what we're looking for. But I loved it. I want to see it again, though. I saw Force Awakens twice in the theater. I only saw Rogue One once, and I meant to go see it again. I just never got around to it because I like Rogue One, and I've watched it a couple times on TV since then. But this is one that was... It is a new take on it. It hangs with everything, but it is that's different, man. That's I don't know what I was expecting, but I don't know if it was that. Star Wars is weird though, because we have so much history with Star Wars, and especially for someone like me who reads all the books and does all that, you know. And if you've read all the books going into this, there are some nice little shout outs to the books and everything, but you don't need to read any of the books going into this. Does it enhance the experience? It did for me, but you're not going to miss anything if you haven't read the 10 books that have come out in the past year. It's fine. But yeah, I'm really kind of jazzed to go see it again now that I've, cause I don't know about you, but when I go see Star Wars movies, because of that experience of the prequels, and going to see them and being so let down by them, you know, I think I sort of hold my breath for the first, you know, half hour of these movies. I'm like, is this good? I think it's good. Is it good? I think it's good, right? Like, I'm sort of, you know, you're so worried about being crushed by that. And especially with this one, because all of the word going in is that it is good. And it's like, well, is it really good? Or are we all just getting on? I don't know if you have that kind of feeling with this stuff. But I do.
What do you mean?
Like, are you worried that it's not going to be good?
I'm always worried that they're not going to be good. I'm always worried, no matter what it is. I'm always worried that it's not going to be any good. And that's just because that's been the experience, right? You get your hopes up and then Hollywood shits on you.
Yeah. And I would say I was enjoying it the whole time, but it took until, and I'll keep it as spoiler free as possible. I will say there is a fight with lightsabers in the middle of the movie. I would say it's the middle. I'm not sure the exact point, but when there is that fight with lightsabers in the middle, that's when I'm like, oh yeah, this is good. Well, like, this is firmly good now. Like, it took till that point till I was fully sold on it though.
That's funny. That's me. Funny because that the Duel of the Fates in Phantom Menace is the only part of that movie that I love.
Of course. Yeah.
Because that was the first lightsaber duel we'd seen since Return of the Jedi.
Oh, and it's so good. It's probably
so much better than anything we'd ever seen in any of the movies before. Right. So I understand what you're saying. My experience with this movie was I was very excited. I avoided everything that I possibly could. And from Thursday until after I saw the movie, I avoided social media.
Yeah, I didn't go on Facebook, and I especially did not go on YouTube.
Yeah, leading up to the Thursday night, I kept seeing a lot of high profile authors who have written Star Wars books, like Delilah Dawson, like Chuck Wendig, posting repeatedly, if you spoil Star Wars, you are a horrible person.
You really are.
I mean, because there's so many people are invested in this and so many people want to see this and want to enjoy this. If you ruin it for them, you're just a horrible person. And I'm paraphrasing, but that was basically the gist of it. And I totally am on board with that. After I posted one thing and it was, I saw the thing and it was glorious.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't posted anything about it yet. And I'm sure I will at some, because look, it's the opening weekend. And I know a lot of people aren't going to be able to see it opening weekend because it sells out. I bought my tickets October 9th.
Here, I was shocked. I bought my tickets late. I bought my ticket late. And I had intended on taking the day off to go see the movie. And then my company called the holiday party for that same day. And I was like, are you kidding me? And so I talked to my boss and I said, look, I'm going to come to the holiday party and then I'm leaving by 1:30 because I have 2:15 tickets to see Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I understand. Yeah, that's a huge deal for you. No problem.
Yeah.
That's cool. The other huge Star Wars fan in the office saw the movie at 11:45 the night before. So he came in and I'm like, keep your damn mouth shut. And he's like, I am. We'll talk about it later. But
like, I don't want to oversell it, but it's better than 10 Super Bowls.
But we have in Colorado now, most of our theaters have converted to the reserve seating.
Yes.
So, which is great. I have my issues with it. It kills spontaneity. Like you can't just be at dinner and say, hey, let's all go to the movies.
Right.
Because then you'll show up and they're like, well, I've got one seat over here and one seat over here. And here's a seat on this corner. And, you know, you can't sit together. But if you're planning, it's great. And you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to do lines. You can show up whenever you want and just go right to your seat and no problem.
That's all my friend and I kept talking about last night. I was like, this is so great. Yeah. Like I bought these tickets 2 months ago. He showed up, you know, 45 minutes before the movie started. We went over together. We didn't have to wait on a line. We sat in a big comfy chair. The closest people were 6 feet away from us. It was great.
When I bought my ticket, the theater was nearly full and I was shocked because it was one seat. There was actually three seats that were dead center, but up high. And I was like, no way is there a dead center seat. And I bought that. And so I ended up sitting dead center.
Cool.
And there was a little kid sitting next to me, but there was nobody in the other seat beside me on my left. And the row in front of me, John, was all mothers and daughters.
Wow.
There was not a single guy in that row. And several of the young girls were dressed as Rey, which was awesome.
Nice.
All the moms had Star Wars shirts on.
Awesome.
And they had toys. They had the special stuff that you get from the theater. I mean, anything Star Wars related, they all had it. And so that was really cool to me. I was like, this is the next generation of fans right here. This is awesome. This is amazing. I'm loving this.
Yeah.
I loved the movie itself as a whole. I did not like the Battlestar Galactica storyline, which is what it felt like to me. Oh.
There's definitely a modern Battlestar Galactica. I looked at it as a framing device to kind of keep the story together.
It seemed, and I
liked that, but I got you on that.
I didn't like it. So that aspect of it, I didn't care for. I also did not care for, unfortunately, Finn's entire story arc.
It was fine. I didn't mind it. It was the one I was least interested in, but I got you.
I felt like they needed to give him something to do, so let's give him something to do.
Agreed. Yeah, I didn't mind it, but I ended up enjoying a lot of those scenes, but I get you with that was the part that I, you know, we were talking about with like the TV shows and Stranger Things and how you like, that's the one where it's like, let's get back to Rey and Luke, or let's get back to Poe, and let's get back to Snoke, and let's get back to Kylo. Like, that's how I kind of felt through it. But they did not bother me. But yeah, that was, out of all of it, that was the part that, you know, ranked last for me too.
The humor was fantastic throughout. Again, totally. I mean, it did not feel out of place. It didn't feel like they were trying to force a joke here or a one-liner here. The actors are responsible for making that so seamless. They just did such a fantastic job, each and every one of them, right?
Yeah.
They all had some sort of line that just cracked you up at some point. And it was just fantastic how they handled it and how they did it. You know, that kind of comedy timing is not always easy to pull off on such a large ensemble cast.
Yeah. Oscar Isaac, I thought, was great with that. And I think because with Carrie Fisher, with her passing, and I think it was supposed to be, you know, well, let's say she's definitely obviously not going to be in episode 9. Right. She passed away. And I don't know what their initial plans were for that, or I have some ideas, but I don't want to speculate because it is a little spoilery. I get the feeling that he's going to have a much bigger role in the
Yeah.
In the
obviously
in
yeah.
episode 9, to where he may be taking more of a, because they kind of were grooming, like the whole thing seems like Leia is kind of grooming him to be a leader. Yeah. And I sort of wonder, is like, oh, is he going to be the whole leader of the rebellion by episode 9? I think that's where it's going. Maybe they don't go that route, but I wouldn't be surprised. And I think that'd be awesome, because as people may or may not know, his character was not supposed to make it past the first third of Force Awakens. When he sort of disappears in the beginning of Force Awakens, that was supposed to be it for Poe Dameron. But I think JJ really liked Oscar Isaac and thought, like, let's keep him in the movie. Let's keep him going.
Well,
so he was not meant to be a bigger role than that. So I think it'd be funny if he ends up being the leader of the whole rebellion by the end of this.
As I was sitting there watching the movie and watching him, the thought occurred to me. I was like, wow, I'm really glad that the actor who played Wedge declined to be in these movies.
Oh, yeah. Because
I think if they had been able to get him, they would have tried to make Wedge that person. I have no basis in reality for this. This is just a gut feeling. I think that they probably, because in Star Wars, especially in the extended universe, Wedge was like the pilot, right? He was like the best. He was like the rogue leader and this and that. And I kind of feel like that may have been the original concept, was to have that Wedge and Tilly's kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
Be that that fighter pilot. And I think him not doing the role led to us having a Poe Dameron. And I am ecstatic that we have a Poe Dameron.
Agreed. Okay. We're over an hour. We could probably talk about it for another hour. And I would like to, for sure. I actually do have a little bit of a
hard will answer. End up seeing it again.
Absolutely. So I was thinking, like, maybe we can do a full on.
And I think, I think we've done a great job of not spoiling stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we really spoiled anything. I don't think so.
We've
so
hinted at some things, but we haven't.
Yes.
We haven't really.
Yes.
Spoiled stuff.
So everybody, if you haven't seen it yet, go see it, because we will almost certainly do a full on scene by scene spoilery kind of deal, I think, because I want to. But I do want to see it again, and I do want to think about it and process it a little more before I really get deep into that. But cool. All right. Well, if you dig the show, patreon.com/functionalnerds. Thanks for the people that are already backing us. But if you're not, consider becoming one of our backers. That would be awesome. Anything else before we go, Patrick?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head, no.
Go see Last Jedi.
Go see Last Jedi. And also, if you haven't, check out Thor Ragnarok. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I got to check that out. All right, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you.
Smoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.